This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 417, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I saw the light on the night that I passed by her window. I saw the flickering shadows of love on her blind.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 417. I am Josh Flanagan, and with me are Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Paul Montgomery.
Happy New Year.
Welcome to the new year.
Welcome. I feel I'm not feeling rusty. I'm feeling glad to be back.
A little bit of iFanboy trivia. This is our first show of 2014.
And also, we're entering our ninth year of podcasting.
It only feels like I've been doing it for not even a year, really.
We are iFanboy. We like comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics. Well, some weeks you don't. I don't know if it qualifies as a bunch. One of us picks the one that is the best book they read. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that, other books from the week, and some other stuff. Sometimes even more stuff. And maybe some goofy nonsense.
How do we categorize a week like this one? The bounties of the first week of 2014.
I just thank my lucky stars that I'm not Connor.
Well, I thought about almost canceling the show because there were only like five books.
You know what?
Read.
Yeah.
But I figured we are professionals and we'll do the show regardless of how many books come out, unless it's our vacation weeks. And next week, I looked at the list. We're going to be crying because they're putting everything else out next week. So
they are. I am a 1 hour comic book Iron Pants. Let's do this. Before we get to the show, there's going to be spoilers for the. I don't know how you wouldn't have read the book.
Three books.
Whatever. Yeah, there'll be some spoiler. We're going to spoil the hell out of them because we're going to have to stretch it out. So if you have
this week, so anemic, we had to get a book from a previous week to talk about that later on.
And Connor agreed to that. That's how bad that is. So if you haven't read your books and that's a thing, come back after you have or pause. Just pause it. Pause it until the battery on your device dies down.
Now that we've really built up the week, what is the pick?
Connor.
Well, it's funny. I was thinking about this earlier, and it's not often that I'm surprised when I'm reading comics. You know, I've been reading them for a long time. We've been doing this job for a long time, and, you know, we read a lot of comics. But I was genuinely surprised reading The Flash 26 because just recently we were talking about how, for the most part, DC doesn't really take the artistic chances that Marvel does. And they tend to have a very, I don't say boring house style. We're going to talk about that with the next book, but... with The Flash 26, we have the new creative team of Christos Gage on writing and Neil Gouge, which is an awesome name to say, on art.
Gage and Gouge.
And, you know, while Neil Gouge is not by any means, you know, radical in his art, it's very much not a traditional DC style, at least what they've been doing for the last couple of years. And I was very happy to see an artist like him on The Flash because he brings a lot of, you know, here's the pun, energy to the book. Mm-hmm. And it was tons of fun to read. And I think one of the problems people have had with the previous 2 years of The Flash with Francis Manapal and Brian Buccoletto on writing and art was that, you know, they're relatively novice writers. They're not complete novices, but they, you know, they were learning as they went. You could read that in the book. Here you've got a professional, you know, veteran like Gage on the book, and there was a lot to love in it. I thought those great characterizations. It was a great one and done story. If you left The Flash and think about you want to come back on, this is a great issue to jump onto. You learn all you need to know about Barry Allen in this issue, about his powers, about who he is. And it was a bit more upbeat. I thought one of the things that sort of hung over The Flash and also the next book we're going to talk about was that there was 2 years of very somber stories, whereas this was just a lot of fun. This is just Barry Allen saving the day against a bunch of Sky Pirates, which is awesome. Sky Pirates are an awesome concept.
Always.
And I just thought it was a lot of fun, and it was really just nice to read a fun Flash story again, which I felt like I hadn't read in a while.
It was like a B12 shot.
That's a book that should be fun, I feel like.
Yes.
That's one of the characters I don't really need him to go dark.
And similar to the – we talked about with this with Daredevil recently with Wade really exploring his powers. We also had Gage, you know, delving into the Flash's powers. Here he runs in a cloud because there's certain kind of clouds have crystals in them, and he's able to use that for traction and as he chases the Sky Pirates. And it was a lot of fun to explore that. And that's, you know, Flash falling out of a plane and having to save himself because the JLA is off on a mission. He can't call on Superman to save the day, so he's got to create, you know – wind underneath him to land. It's just, I thought it was really fun. Flash comic.
It was a great, you go to Flash's roots as a science hero, and it's this coming right full circle, you know, talking about the crystals and the clouds and stuff like that, and phasing through objects and things, and would Superman be faster in these situations and whatever. And really, I think the story here is Googe. I thought Manapul was great and would be a tough act to follow. So who do you get to follow that? And would it be just like a house styled, you know, New 52 kind of artist, and complete curveball, it's somebody totally different. Reminded me a lot of the earlier work of Freddie E. Williams.
Yes.
Like when he was on Robin.
More fluid.
But I mean, in that same sort of ballpark, and I was a big fan of that. Freddie E. Williams sort of like shifted his style a little bit in recent years, but this is sort of a callback to that, I think. And you know, I'm curious to see what the next issue is, because is it going to be more episodic like this, or are we going to get into more of the longer arcs and stuff? And I'm cool if they decide to do episodic for a bit and just have fun with it and do these lighter stories.
I mean, it's sort of the classic new creative team issue where you come on and they get to tell their story to define their world before they get into their whatever story they're going to tell. So, but I can see it going either way, but I thought this was just a hell of a lot of fun. And I know a lot of people dropped off The Flash in the last 2 years. If you have and you like the character, I'd say come back now or check this issue out, see if you like the feel of it, because it is definitely a different feel than the last two years. I liked the last 2 years, but this was good.
No, they were sort of like a little bit uneven, but I think there was some really good stuff in that run. But I think what I'm excited about right now is Gage's take on the Rogues, who have been much darker lately. So I wonder if, you know, this same sensibility is going to extend to the rest of the Flash's world, and we'll get a return to the funnier Rogues that I grew to love.
Right. I thought.
Googe from? What I feel like
we've seen him before.
I'm gonna look that up, but you discuss what you.
I really like the sequence where, you know, the Flash is chasing the plane. It's taking off, and he runs up the side of the downed helicopter, up the propeller, leaps, and then phases through the wall, kind of like Kitty Pryde.
Yeah.
And lands. I think it's just a great use of his powers to really and explore, not necessarily what a guy that fast to do because he could do anything, but just the different ways he can utilize that speed and, you know, just different ways we haven't necessarily seen before. Manapul did that a little bit with the running up the buildings and things
like
that.
I like the idea that, you know, the Flash is like, well, you know what, this is a personal vendetta for me and I want to catch this person, but she's up in the air now and I've sort of missed my opportunity. You know, I want to call in the Justice League. And then they don't have any flyers for him. So he's like, well, maybe we'll get that plane and we'll go after it. And then they're like, well, what are you going to do? You can run really fast on the ground. He's like, I'm going to do my best.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great take on the character.
A very likable Flash.
Yeah.
I thought,
Gage is a
good writer.
Good writer. I think he does superheroes really well. Like he gets that sort of, I don't know, that last sentence you just said, I'm going to try, you know, that's, mm-hmm. that feels very correct. And you know, he's come on and done a lot of good work here and there. Did he do Avengers Academy? That's him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, and that's one of those things, like, sort of like, he's kind of like Gil Simone in that respect, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got, like, he'll do a run of something and people will be really into that thing for a while. But it hasn't been like a big epic run or anything.
I really enjoyed what he did on Avengers Arena. I really enjoyed that. And
Avengers Arena.
Avengers Academy, which then turned into Avengers Arena. I love them both.
So speaking of Gail Simone, that he was the artist on Welcome to Tranquility with Gail.
Oh, I like that book.
Okay.
He did Wildstorm stuff. He did Majestic, and then he did with Christos Gage. He did a Wildcat World's End
series.
That
makes sense because they, you know, they seem to work well together. Gooch yep. is someone that DC should utilize. He's just different enough from the mainstream to be interesting, but also really has an exciting style. Yeah. It works well for the Flash.
Gage and Gooch.
That's also nice too.
Now, one of the other books that changed creative teams this week was Aquaman 26. This was Jeff Parker. Changed writers. Jeff Parker is the new writer. It's still Paul Pelletier in art with the co-artist who I don't have in front of me as I load the issue on my iPad. And I actually really liked the story in this a lot. I thought the same way. This was a more fun Aquaman. Then Aquaman really also was down in the dumps for most of the last 2 years, and I mean that in a tone way. It was very somber. Mm-hmm. All that war happening and people constantly being killed and captured. But I thought Parker brought a lot of his Parker quality to the story. I liked the bickering relationship between Mera and Aquaman. I liked the sort of Game of Thrones-esque council that was meeting while Aquaman was away. I liked a lot of the stuff. I thought where it hurt the book was in the art. I thought it was just sort of very pedestrian looking.
Yeah, I mean, coming into this, I've been really excited for Jeff Parker's run on this, and I, you know, I'm still going to be following it. But I think coming into it, I was expecting something like a clean slate, just a new start.
I think you need a new art team to go with a new writer, I think.
Yeah.
You wanted something that made it feel like it was different than all of the DC books that you have come to feel about.
Yeah.
I will say, from a standpoint of, there was a couple of things that I thought were kind of cool. Was his big, whatever the big Leviathan beast was. Yeah. I was like, you know, art on that was pretty strong. And also, like, it was a strong sort of concept to have. I was like, this is good. This is the right way. A giant sea beast that they have to fight. That's, you know, and you get to put in that scale to it. And, you know, right away from the beginning, when they were like, did you get through the carapace? And I was like, that's going to be interesting right away. Like, that'll be fun to watch get drawn and to have that little adventure that goes through. And you know this is going to become his sea beast buddy. So I'm excited about that.
I like the idea of he goes so high up into the sky and he's gonna zoom back down and he doesn't fly, but like that velocity is going to turn into the biggest punch he ever gave. And then that didn't even phase the creature. And then he tries to communicate with it and he's taken into like another world. And you know, good playing with the Aquaman power set.
That's a signature sort of Parkerism, I think, to me. So when he came on to do like Thunderbolts, you saw him sort of utilizing all those characters in a different way. And when he had that sort of alternate universe of Marvel people, then you got to see a different sort of take on these. And so he's got that kind of, and I've said this before, that sort of Mark Waidian sort of look at how these powers work, sort of a fresh way to play in the world. I don't care about Aquaman. I never have in my life. But I'm kind of a follow Jeff Parker to whatever he writes now thing. So I enjoyed it fine. I think the art was definitely what you're saying.
Well, I really feel like you would have liked it more had it been a new different art team.
Oh yeah.
More dynamic art team. I really liked the tone of it. I really liked the characterization. I thought it was a little bit funny at points, which Aquaman usually isn't. And Mera and Aquaman have that great sort of bickering couple thing. That
yeah, you know, I just say I think the script is great, and I think that there's definitely room for it to turn into something really special. I think sort of the existing art team trying to look past that and say, well, what could this feel like?
I don't think the art was bad.
It's just serviceable, which didn't excite. Yeah, didn't excite at all.
Yeah, I think that when you look at the other books that we. Not that we're all the same, but the things that we've been enjoying from DC are the ones that made the departure on the art style.
I read Flash and Aquaman back to back, and I think it really stood out that Flash is the more I don't want to say edgy art style, but the more experimental, slightly experimental art style, where this seems very much DC House style, which is somewhat serviceman-like.
I don't know.
Serviceable.
I don't know where they think that some little town in Maine has such a multicultural population.
I know.
But
I thought about that, too. I feel like the fishermen would be burlier. Like, they're wearing jeans and t-shirts.
Like, I just read this part, and I was like, none of these people look like they're from Maine. but I do think that he got the tone right. Was like, yeah. Don't know, I'm not going to tell you. Nope.
The fishermen walking the street carrying the nets are just, they look like they were...
Those don't. I could have sent him some reference for that. I was not.
More facial hair. Baseball cap.
Well, he's going to get the beard back, right? That's one of the things, is Aquaman's going to get his beard. I think that was... I heard
he had it back in the last issue for it was a joke. Like he was asleep. He was in a coma and he woke up with his beard and then everybody told him to shave it.
This is one of those things that I actually really enjoyed because I haven't been reading it. And I always enjoy being thrust back into a superhero story after not knowing what's going on and like having that be, which I know is the exact opposite of how all comic book readers feel. But I like putting together the world that they put up halfway through because that reminds me of starting to read comics.
I like the cover. And actually, I want to back up one second and talk about Flash again. And I thought... The only thing I didn't like about the issue was that the cover did a disservice to the book and that, you know, it's not Brett Booth drawing the comic. And Brett Booth is not like Alex Ross where there's a added bonus to having him do the cover. It's
not just that it's a different artist. It's a completely different sensibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here I liked the cover a lot. It was a great, I mean, it was very sort of in-your-face cover.
Guardians of the Galaxy number 10, one of the... like four Marvel books that came out this week.
This is still a thing?
This is still a thing. It's
just
hodgepodge of a book. It's Brian Michael Bendis is the writer, and they've had a couple different artists, and Francesco Francavilla did an issue. This one, Kevin Maguire, is kind of why I'm talking about it. Because Kevin Maguire was going to draw Justice League 3000, and then they booted him for probably no good reason. And I guess Brian Michael Bendis said, "Hey, come on over and
you did. It actually happened on Twitter,
yeah,
publicly.
And check out Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's a bit of an outing with Gamora and Angela, who's in the book for some weird reason. This book
because he draws sexy ladies. That's
yeah, no, but I mean like Angela. I mean Angela being in the book at all, and Angela's presence in this book predates Kevin Maguire coming to
it. Does
it
still have the horrible coloring?
The coloring is a little weird on the Kevin Maguire stuff. Like, this isn't, you know, we've seen Kevin Maguire look a lot better, but...
His personal colors is a problem.
But I don't know that... He draws some nice lips.
He's a great artist, but the coloring really throws me off, but...
And I think he has a good handle on these characters, and it's weird. It's surreal seeing Kevin Maguire doing these sort of weird, deep-cut kind of Marvel characters. You're so used to seeing, the Martian Manhunter and all that stuff. And, this series is sort of figuring out what it wants to be and what it is.
What it is a placeholder till the movie comes out.
It's a placeholder till the movie comes out. But what I am excited about coming up, they're having a crossover with all new X-Men of all things.
Oh,
which Brian Michael Bendis is also writing. It's the trial of Jean Grey. And I'm kind of curious to see all of those characters mixed. And since All New X-Men is a really great book and we've all really been enjoying it, I think maybe it would be a good influence on this book. Not that this book has been bad. It's just sort of like rudderless. It's just, it's sort of working in service to Infinity and all the political machinations going on in there. But yeah, it kind of feels like they're floating, waiting until that movie comes out but they're really going for the likenesses on some of these characters.
Well, that's what happened to the Avengers. It's going to happen to Guardians of the Galaxy too. Eventually, they're all going to look like the movie people.
I'm not so big on Star-Lord's new like motocross look, but.
So, do you hear Bradley Cooper in your head when you read Rocket Raccoon?
Certainly, do not, Connor. I don't. I hear Jerry Burns.
This week was they released the first real photo from the movie, which was interesting.
Yeah, which they leaked like months ago and said, "Whoa, wait, no, say, no, 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 no." But now it's out officially.
One of the cliches of comic book movies and TV shows now is that people are like, "I can't believe that there's actually this."
Yeah.
Which is silly because there's been a lot of them. But I saw that photo and I was like, "I can't believe that that's actually the thing that's happening."
It's the raccoon, right?
Groot.
No, it's the whole thing. It was a moderately popular comic book series.
Yeah.
even recently. It was, we all liked it. It was good, but it wasn't great. And it wasn't.
Which are we talking about? Abnett and Lanning?
Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, yeah,
I would argue that that's great. I would argue that run is great.
It's very good. I think it's like a.
Either way, it wasn't very popular. I guess that's more.
I mean, it wasn't. But it wasn't groundbreaking. It was really very good, but it wasn't so good that that would trump the fact that it's just an odd property.
I feel like this is Marvel drunk with power, and if they pull it off, then it's just going to get nuts over there.
Yeah, I agree, which will be great to see.
Yes, no, I'm not saying that in a derogatory manner at all.
And we're going to start to see movies that are like the weird spin-off series and things that they've been doing, and I'm all for that because you really get some fun stuff out of that.
But like what's
maybe
weirder
in five
than
years
Guardians
we'll get
of the
Magneto
Galaxy,
Testament.
What's weirder than Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
It's pretty weird.
I'm sure we can find many. I mean, you know.
Like the She-Hulk as a lawyer.
Will get his Rama Space Knight movie. And then, you know, Beta Ray Bill. There's all kinds of, you can go deep into this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is pretty weird. I'm not saying this isn't that weird. It's really weird. But there's even fewer, less popular characters. A Star Fox movie.
The Titans?
Know? Right.
Although they're doing Thanos. It's, I mean, theoretically, Star Fox is Thanos' brother.
True. Mm-hmm.
Isn't he?
I don't know.
I believe so.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I believe that's true.
Every once in a while, you think that I'm not the guy who knows some shit.
You have that small window of like early 90s Avengers knowledge.
Yep. Well, and there's bits of it in the 80s from when I started reading.
Star Fox is all up in that.
Oh, Star Fox is awesome.
Superman Unchained number 5.
He's not to be confused with Eros, though.
No. I feel like this is going to read really well in trade because the delays are so long, I forget what's happening in it. Every time,
it's a little bit of a problem. But
like every time I got to remember who this giant guy is with Superman and why he's there. I always usually do by the end, but it's by the end, so you know I'm not getting the full impact of the story.
I was really happy to see Dustin Gwynn.
Yes, those look great. That flashback sequence.
Don't need any kind of recap for that. The Dustin Gwynn stuff that reads fine.
Yeah, I like this a lot, but. I don't see like the idea of it was you know like this is going to be the big great Superman story and it's not that. It's an interesting Superman story, but it feels like an Elseworlds story, and it's interesting to watch these two characters interact with each other and try to figure it out. Although
I do like it as so refresh my memory. I could be wrong. This guy, what is his name again?
Wraith.
He came down in 1939, so he's kind of like the Superman analog, right? Like, he was grabbed by the military instead of the kindly old Kents.
He was also one of the atomic bombs.
Right. So I did like that he is forced Superman to look at himself. You know, I liked the sequence where he says, all right, you got friends, and now you got a girl you like now, but look at 10 years down the road, what's it going to be like? And then you see them all older, although Lois gets really old in 10 years.
Yes, she does.
Well, she's living hard.
A lot of cigarettes and coffee. And then look 10 years more down the line, 10 years more. And I liked that aspect of making Clark sort of face the reality of his life.
The newspapers won't exist anymore.
Even though it's a life that we'll never see in the comics, it's a life that he has to contend with. That his
and Jim Lee has also never seen a real pair of glasses.
It's a great sequence, and it's kind of creepy and makes you think a little bit. I like the idea that the Clark keeps going to the office even when it's like
what's
run
down going on
and the cobwebs and stuff, and still putting on makeup to fool cool. people that are have been dead for years.
That was cool. I don't know. I really do think I'm going to enjoy this more when I read it all at once. But for now, I am enjoying it. I think he has
a great handle on the characters. It's not a Superman character that is grating on me. Which it's because they're becoming fewer and farther between though, the Superman characters that I don't like, because we've got Pac over at Action Comics and a lot of great stuff.
Superman and Batman.
And Adventures of Superman. I did
kind of giggle when. I liked the guys who had the masks that could project any face, but then when he was wearing Lois's dad's face, and then he showed his real face, and it was kind of the same face, but it did just different hair. But I did kind of giggle.
Maybe
at
not that
was
best
lost
Jim
on
Lee
me
work.
A little bit. No, I don't think this is the best thing. I don't think this is the best thing for him. Meaning, I don't know if him and Scott Snyder mesh extraordinarily well. Basically there's a lot of standing and talking.
Yeah.
There's a lot of it. And that doesn't really showcase what I think you're coming along for, G. Jim Lee for.
Do you wish Capullo was drawing this or someone else or just Dustin Nguyen the whole time? Or
Capullo does a better job with it.
Yeah, Capullo can do those.
There are moments where I was like, the sequence with, you know, the aging stuff is really interesting, but imagine if it was someone who had a better, you know, was more simpatico with Snyder's writing.
You know, it's honestly, if you look at the layouts as you go through it, they're not all that interesting or dynamic. There's a thing when you have to have talking scenes in comics. You really can't get around it.
Yeah.
But if you look at those pages, there's nothing to them that says I'm putting something into this to make it more interesting.
Capullo's really good at that. He does find ways to make the conversations that are happening interesting, dynamic. You know, he zooms in and out on, you know. You know, I like Jim Lee. He's a good artist. You know, he's a legend. He's rightfully so, but he's not right for this story.
No, I don't think so either.
I don't know if he's the right guy for Scott Snyder's scripts.
Yeah.
He does what he does really well. I don't know that he does. This is what he does. Should be doing this story, kind of story.
But
it looked much better in the beginning than it does now.
As is the case.
You can see the much heavier inking. Mm-hmm. You know, influence of the inkers on here. But you know, as Josh said, I do like it.
I am enjoying it. I like a Superman story. You know.
I liked I thought the flashback was great. The second part was particularly shocking when crazy old guy hit Martha in the face with the shotgun.
That's not
agree.
And I was like, no, you don't hit Martha Kent in the face with the shotgun.
I like that. I mean, is this canon?
Sure.
I mean, I guess that it's all
whatever
is.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But like it, you know, it's making real. You know, there was a dude who saw Superman flying. There, you know, who shot at them. You know, there's a good cliffhanger there.
Yeah.
There's going to be some collateral somehow, unless he, you know, makes him use his special forget magic.
He's going to kiss him.
Yeah.
Isn't that what he did in Superman 2 or whatever he did?
Yes.
Yeah. Have sex with him?
He could spin the earth backwards. He's got to have sex with that crazy old farmer.
listen,
you know what?
Listen, Clark, we talked about this. You're going to have to do it. I don't want to do it.
Have sex with him. Do it now.
He's got scabies. There's something crawling in his hair.
So you guys will remember that I've talked about Baltimore quite a bit. And I think that at the beginning of this story was the one where I was a little like, okay, let's get on with it.
This is another number one.
It is, but that's how they do it. It's just a series of it's really a series of one-shots and like two-issue minis. They're not long,
this does
drawn
feel
out.
Like a continuation to the ones that they've been doing. So yeah.
No, it is because it's basically been Baltimore on the tale of this character whose name I cannot remember, but he's the one with the one red eye.
He was the guy that killed his wife or turned his Baltimore's wife, and
but the good news is that as I was getting to the end of it, I saw it appears that the final confrontation will be happening.
Yes,
which is good because it's time for that. There's not really enough to this story. Outside, basically, it's one man's quest for revenge against a vampire.
This is an issue where it's very much setting up the pieces on the board so that we can get to the final confrontation. Like in this one, like the bad guy, the vampire that basically made Baltimore who he is, and you know, sent him on this revenge spree, killing all these other vampires and starting this whole thing. And I like how they recounted that, and that's sort of the book.
Yeah. They also suggested that Baltimore had a hand in creating that one, whose name is not in this book, I don't think.
Right. He's like, let's get – I got all Baltimore's friends from this pub, and I got them all in one place. I'm going to kill all of them, and even though I'm on my way out, that'll be my sort of like last, you know, thumb at the nose to Baltimore, and because I hate that guy. As I was sleeping, I was a vampire. I was like in vampire hibernation, and then Baltimore had to go and stir things up. And so this is it. This curtain's for you, Baltimore. Didn't quite work.
So when I got to the end and I see, they're both in the same room together. It says to be concluded. I thought, all right, good. Let's do it. It's time for that. It feels
so. You're enjoying yourself.
Good. I am enjoying it, but. We were getting to the point where like, does this movie need to be 3 hours long? It was like that, and I enjoyed it. I really liked the story about the crazed priest who I think was in the beginning of this one, who was like the Inquisitor kind of guy.
I like that story too. That guy was
good. I like that one a lot.
More interesting than just a vampire.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, it was time to get on with it. I really like Ben Stenbeck a lot. He's like a nice combination of sort of a Mignola style artist along with like Peter Snaberg or something like that.
That's exactly what he is, yeah.
Yeah, and it's been very consistent the whole way through, so it's been fun to, and of course you've got Dave Stewart in there, but we're not going to mention that because
that was so 2013.
Yeah, I know. But it's good, but it's time, basically. So hopefully if there's another adventure, there's something else goes on, they have a different direction to go with it. Because the Wild Hunt thing is actually, that's a Hellboy book.
More Sledgehammer 44. I'm ready to move over to that stuff.
So you probably are wondering, how can I help support more of this riveting show?
Hey, jerk.
And if you're wondering it like that with any kind of attitude, Connor thinks you're a jerk. As always, we want to actually thank everybody for helping support the show in the ways you have. But if you want to keep doing that, we'll make it easy for you. Go to ifanboy.com/Amazon and you can buy all of the stuff that you buy through Amazon. But we get a little tiny piece of that. Hope to make that easy on you. We know that in the best part of the holidays, and this is going to sound horrible and selfish, is going to buy all the stuff that no one got you.
Oh yeah.
Afterwards, and using your gift cards and things like that. So if you want to do that through our little hub, we really appreciate that. It actually helps out a ton. So keep that up, and you don't have to do anything. You can also go to ifanboy.com/registration if you want to contribute directly to the show. You can either do $3 a month or $30 a year or a contribution of your own choosing, regardless of the size. And that is a way that you can just make sure that this keeps going forward. It pays our bills. It keeps the things running, and it makes this show keep going. And it's all up to you. So that's very helpful. And we really appreciate everybody who did that for the last year. You guys means a lot to us. So let's keep doing that going forward.
Yes.
What did you buy?
Myself?
Yeah, did you buy anything?
I have not done that yet, just because
really?
I have only been the Kilpatrick Inn has been full for 2 weeks.
I see.
And I haven't had a moment to really focus on that. But I've got a couple things on my list.
Okay. Okay.
So that's
Paul,
all
did you
that's
get
all
st-
I
imagine.
I didn't
Paul,
I'm not so very materialistic, so I didn't know. Just kidding. No, I got the Zatoichi set from Criterion. Pretty awesome. Been watching that. 25 movies about a blind masseuse samurai.
I would never finish that.
Yeah.
Like, never.
It's 25 dedication, movies. You know?
Yeah, yep. No, I know.
And there's three per disc, so you put the one disc in, and then you get three movies right there. So that takes
now,
out some of the
just,
time.
Do you just sit there and watch them? Or do you do other things?
I do other stuff.
If it's subtitled, that makes that harder.
That does make it harder. So sometimes I have to rewind and watch it over again.
Yeah,
like I say, complete because I'm not fluent.
You're not
conversational. I'm not conversational either.
I thought that was part of the conversation we had when we brought you on. Make sure you were completely fluent in Japanese. I guess not. That's fine. G.I. Joe number
12.
12.
G.I. Joe number 12 by that rapscallion Paul Allor. I know Paul, so get that out of the way right in the beginning, and I'm not a G.I. Joe guy, but I wanted to check it out because Paul Allor, right, I'm not old enough.
He's taking over.
I own G.I. Joe's.
He's taking over for Van Lente, right? Wasn't Van Lente on this series? You don't even
right.
know that.
I don't know. I'm not a G.I. Joe guy, but you know. But anyways, he's going to be doing, he's doing a sort of a 2-issue sort of history of Cobra Commander. And I know Cobra Commander. And yeah.
That he just guy. Wants a man.
And then he's going to do.
He's gonna, sure,
it's really just out. So you guys can do these impressions. And then and then two more issues after that. So he'll be doing 4 issues overall.
At any point in this story, is he going to turn into a snake man?
He's just wearing sort of a bandana in front of his face at this point. When they
we
talk
can
about
only
the commander.
Hope. However, I will say that I read this. Yeah. And I really. It took me in some places I did not expect to go.
There it's was, about. PR for despots who can live for centuries. Like, that's sort of what it's about. It's like they're, you know, the Cobra is sort of a global power at this point. And
this is a compliment, but it's not going to sound like it.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
This was very smart. And I was like, wow, you're really, It was not taking a commercial approach to telling the story of...
That's kind of the point that I wanted to make, was that, like, Paul Aller has written stuff for G.I. Joe now, and before that, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So he's, like, this work-for-hire, licensed property stuff, but he doesn't write it that way. He writes it like it's a creator-owned project. He writes it with the same level of thoughtfulness.
Pirate Cobra Commander, and was it 1915... Yeah, 1915 World War One prison camp Cobra Commander.
So Cobra Commander's like Swamp Thing.
It feels a bit like that.
It's a bunch of vignettes to different periods in history, basically where Cobra Commander makes friends and then is
or
a
Doctor
dick.
Who. Is it the same guy? Is it Cobra Commander is like a office?
It's unclear.
I think it's like it's about the myth.
So we could still have a Snake Man.
There's always hope for Snake Man.
What was the name of that?
Like a Baroness in it. And...
Of Josh, what was the name of that land?
Oh, I don't know.
Cobra La La La.
Cobra La. That was the group.
But what was the name of it anyway? I don't want to remember.
I haven't remembered for a reason. He was once a man.
So,
but it's all these sort of anecdotes about how Cobra Commander was sort of a jerk to different people, and it's a little bit of his art of war. Sort of like his philosophy about dealing with your enemies. And
is it just to yell at them and call them incompetent?
He kills. Like a guy dies to get him out of a prison camp, and then he goes to deliver a message to that guy's son. He delivers the message, and then he kills the kid.
Which seems antithetical.
It does.
It's like a waste of time to go all the way out there to deliver the message.
But they're making a point, and I like the idea that they're on this campaign going around the world, telling people, like, spreading the gospel of Cobra Commander and public relations and stuff. So
I'm still kind of hoping at the end of this that it's just Roadblock carrying a snake around.
Is Roadblock there at all? Does he rhyme?
Is there still a Roadblock? Wasn't there some sort of problem?
There was a Roadblock. He was in the most recent movie. It was The Rock.
Oh, okay.
There was a bit of a rights issue at one point. They changed his name, but he was in the most recent G.I. Joe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He has no patience for that snake. at least when traveling without a jacket through the Arctic.
Seriously. All-Star Western 26. Now, I guess I'm the only one still reading this, right?
In the future? Or
He's in the present. But what's interesting was this was the issue, the second part of the Demons in Burning Man story. What was cool about this was that Jonah Hex is infected with the Black Mercy space flowers, which you may recall from For the Man Who Has Everything, the Alan Moore story, where Superman was infected with that. And it makes you see your, fantasy. And what Jonah Hex sees, which I thought was fun, because it was sort of a throwback to the old series, was pregnant Tallulah Black and their marriage. And I thought that was a great sequence.
Oh, cool.
But they get to kill lots of people at the wedding.
Yeah, so at their wedding, they go get married, and they end up killing everyone, including the preacher. I thought that was fun. I mean, you have to really understand this is a different book. I mean, it ends with Jonah Hex going to Metropolis and running into Superman. So, but I like
that.
It's
a very different book.
I like that first sequence.
I miss Tallulah Black.
She's walking around, pregnant, belly sticking out of her stomach, and still catching bad guys.
That's good.
I did like the way John Constantine got rid of the Black Mercy just by kicking it through his back.
I'll be honest. It was not the best John Constantine. I was like, why does he sound like? It's okay. It's not mine anyway. It's fine.
You say bloody a lot.
Let it go. And then they kick some hippies out of a tent.
And they go have sex in that tent.
Yeah. Well, obviously. Why else would you need a tent immediately?
Jonah Hex and John Constantine? Or
Yeah. Again. And then Superman shows up.
Okay.
Superman was there. He's like, so...
do you guys need to forget? Is anyone looking to forget?
It's like
woman, I don't care. Anyone. Just anyone need to forget anything. I'm here for you. All right. Rocket Girl 3. Am I still the only one reading this book?
Yes.
Yes.
Image Comics. Paul, you don't like it?
I'm going to read it in trade.
Oh, jerk.
Because I missed the first one.
I do all that anyway. What I really wanted to mention was that I think Amy Reeder's work is quite wonderful. And I think that she brings a lot of style to this book. I mean, it's a fairly standard sort of science fiction person at a time story, but it's a lot of fun. And they get to play with the 80s New York's, concepts. But... there's just a wonderful panel in here. There's a scene where the main character is being interrogated by the police, and the cop goes out of the room for a minute, and they hear a crash, and they come back, and they see that the little interrogation window's been broken, so they think she's escaped through that. But there's a you turn the page and she's actually underneath the interrogation table, like clinging to the underside of it. And it's just this great under angle that you've never really see in comics that it was really dynamic. It goes across the two pages. And I just think Amy Reeder is a wonderful artist. And I think more people should check it out. And I think it's funny that the cops are in the future are all teenagers, because in the future you can't trust anybody over 30.
I like that.
So they've got like peach fuzz mustaches and stuff. But I just really think it's really fun. It's a great science fiction story if you're looking for that. So those are the books. Those are actually almost all, those are all but one book I read this week. The only book we didn't talk about was Tom Strong.
And now we talked about it.
There you go. So you can do nothing. You're out of luck. Paul.
Yeah.
We're a little rusty. First show back's always a little rusty. All right. Paul. Last week, what was it, last week or the week before?
It was sometime in December.
Sometime in December, Lock and Key ended. So
Lock and Key, Alpha number 2.
Talk about that.
Yeah, and people were like, are you guys going to talk about Lock and Keys? Like, I know you're taking a break, but like, could you do a podcast just about Lock and Key? I was, whoa, calm down.
We need vacation too.
Calm down, sports fans. So I was like, we'll talk about it. And luckily, I said we'd talk about it because that gives us something to talk about this week. So this is the very end of Lock and Key, at least for the story of Key House and the Lock family.
Keep in mind, Paul, that I am two trades behind in this, so...
Okay, yeah, people told me not to spoil it, so even though we have a spoiler warning, I'm going to try to not say any proper nouns or adjectives or anything. When last we spoke about Lock and Key, I guess Lock and Key Alpha number 1, I was a little bit underwhelmed by it because it felt like it was a big rush to get to the end and tie up the plot. And there were a lot of characters, moving around the board and trying to rush them to not just a logical conclusion, but an emotional conclusion, because this is a book that's been very heavy at times, and it's about loss and first love and a lot of things like that. And a lot of those characters, I felt, deserved a little bit more time to come to their conclusion. And this felt like it was very therapeutic. This one, it starts with a funeral, but it doesn't quite go that way in the end. So I'm trying not to spoil it.
So do you find it as fascinating? Not fascinating, a satisfying wrap up to the, I mean, you love this book. I love this book too. I just read it in card cover trades and behind a bit. But do you find it satisfying? I know you felt either from talking on the show or just amongst ourselves, you felt like it was rushing a bit towards the end.
I did feel it was rushing a bit towards the end, but this issue I think is really important in terms of saying where everybody is. It's not exactly like the end of Six Feet Under or anything like that, and completely placing everybody. Yeah.
It's okay, Josh.
And completely placing everybody but this is it's a really good denouement, and it's actually I didn't get misty or anything, but it is an emotionally satisfying conclusion for all of the characters. And I think there were a few people who commented that they had the same sort of frustration with that last issue. I think they'll probably really appreciate this issue and where it puts the characters and, dotting all the T's and, crossing all the I's and everything. So, I was happy with it. And I'm looking forward to going back and reading it all from the beginning, because in the beginning I read them in collections. I think I read the first two in collections and that caught me up to the issues. Mm-hmm. And just the sort of sporadic way it came out. I think it'll read much better, in collections, and I'm looking forward to that. And I think as impressive as the series got, I think some of those first few trades are the strongest work, because that's when the story was small. And
I felt like, for me, and again I'm behind, is that it started to get a little unwieldy.
Yeah.
I did like it best when it was a small examination of this family and the demon that tormenting them, but then it became like a big thing of all these different demons, and I started to sort of lose the thread a little bit. But I still really enjoy it. I think that Joe Hill's a really great comic book writer.
Yeah,
he understands the medium really well.
Yeah, there's a lot of mythology towards the end, and that's sort of a lot to come to terms with. But those first, and I'm not saying it's bad, it's just it's the first few collections, maybe the first three, are really contained. And, that first story was like they were able to do it in the pilot of that TV show that never got off the ground, but it was a really successful adaptation. That's how sort of tight that first arc was.
Yes, yes.
I think it's like the third volume. Even in the second volume, they start doing really experimental things, Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez, the artist, with what you can do with an issue. Like there's one issue where it's like all splash pages, and it's a big, you know, knockdown kind of fight, almost like a kaiju battle, because they're big, larger than life size characters. Other issues with the birds, I always remember. I don't remember the issue number. The calendar issue, just really experimental, ambitious stuff, and I really admired that. And then then you get to a point where you have to say, like, I've got all this mythology, now I have to bring it to its logical conclusion. And a lot of that was satisfying. Some of it was a little bit, well, I don't know, if I think they might have bit off a little bit more than they could chew. And they even had to add extra issues to the end of this run to actually accomplish it. But if it had just ended with that last issue, I would have been pretty disappointed. But this little coda, I think, was pretty satisfying.
Well, that's good. I mean, I thought it's been one of the better books the last 5 years or so, however long it's been.
I like that it was good like that, but it was also sort of, I don't want to say out of the mainstream, because it's pretty much a mainstream comic, but it's off the sort of standard. I don't know. I mean, in a way, Joe Hill's
more mainstream
than a lot of comics.
Sure.
So in that, it was a different track for a comic book, I suppose. I feel like it had a slightly different kind of fan base. It was released differently. It's a horror book, so
I like that. It's also it's a sort of multi generational family story. I mean, we've got spoilers for the first issue, really. Dad dies, and it's down to mom and two boys and a girl and their uncle relocating into this family house. And it's cool that I think
that's always been the strongest part of it, has been that family dynamic.
It leans to the kids, but there are some really heavy, really important stories with the mom coping with the loss of her husband and trying to hold the family together and her alcoholism.
Yeah.
I was really kind of put aback by some of that. I was really surprised. Like, I didn't expect it to go that dark. Like, demons are hardly fairy world demons are hardly the worst thing that you can encounter in this world. There's far worse things.
I suppose it was its own thing. Sort of like Hellboy, really.
Yeah.
Just it had its own thing going on. And it made its own path.
They've talked about doing more stuff in this world, maybe not with these particular characters. I think there's plenty of room to do that, because this was so focused on this family and this house, but there's obviously a larger world out there. And I think he had a novel out last year, Joe Hill did, Nosferatu. And it was the first book, he'd done some ambitious books before that, but it was the first novel where it showed he can do the same crazy world building as his father, Stephen King, did and continues to do. And he tied in a lot of that stuff. I think he could do a lot. And he's got that Cape series that some other writers have written for in IDW Comics.
Jason Ciaramella
is mainly. Yeah. He does some really interesting world building. And I would be very interested to see what they do with the Lock and Key world next, if they want to do that.
I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the trades, but I know you were saddened when it ended.
Yeah. I have the fourth book, but I don't have the third book. It's just one of those things, like, I've not read.
I want to reread the first two. I lent them out to somebody, and I have no idea who, and I don't know where they are. So, but I will track them down.
That's a problem.
That is a problem, but yeah, I'll get there.
Well, sad to see it go.
Yeah.
Let's do a couple of audience thingies, questions, comments, discussion topics.
Okay.
First is JM from Parts Unknown. JM says, for budgetary reasons, I am limiting myself for the time being to an annual Marvel Unlimited subscription. What I would like to do is read a book discussed in your podcast and listen to the podcast to what you guys thought and learn from your insights. Obviously, That is impossible with newer episodes covering books not yet available on Marvel Unlimited. So, have you by chance, or perhaps one of your listeners, compiled a list of your older podcasts cross-referenced to Marvel books available on Marvel Unlimited? Just trying to save myself the effort of trial and error of going through all the podcast notes and looking it up on Marvel Unlimited. If not, I will try to build this and share this list with you if you're interested. And we have definitely not done that, but I think that'd be awesome if somebody did do that.
I like to think of that episode of Frasier where he's missing a tape of one of his broadcasts and he like puts out the call to his listeners to try and find if anybody has a recording, and he discovers this, it's Adam Arkin, who is like his super fan and has like recordings of everything he's ever said out loud in his house. And, you know, you pull back a curtain and there's just like a big mural of Frasier heads. And I think that we're charming enough that there's someone out there who does that for us.
I feel like, I mean, there's a way that you can organize it or do whatever, but I feel like it's all, you could theoretically just Google iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast issue and number. And it's going to take you right to a page with a timestamp and a player right there.
Yeah, theoretically. So I mean, it's all in the show notes and
But he won't know if we talked about a book he's going to read. You know what I mean? Like before he reads it, he's not going to know if we talked about it or not.
I see what you're saying.
So some crazy person, and by crazy I mean it in the best possible way,
devoted,
is going to have to make a chart, and I love charts, with the cross referencing what's available versus what we talk about, which it's most things are available, aren't they? So it's probably easier just to make a chart of what Marvel books we have talked about, and then go off that.
Kind of, that's sort of what you'd have to do, like just check out what we're talking about, and you can also find trends in the books that we talk about.
You
like, there are books
by,
we talk about multiple times.
Well, yeah, and you could do it by, like, if you're talking about Marvel, that stuff was all sort of framed by events. So you could do the Secret Invasion era, or you could do the whatever the thing was that came after that, the Siege. Yeah. Those kind of things.
If someone does do it, let us know so we can tell JM and anyone else interested.
But if you're going to go back, things that we've talked about a lot, like, Uncanny X-Men and All New X-Men, Daredevil we talked about a lot, Thor we talked about a lot.
Yeah, although not this week. I didn't read any Marvel books this week.
I didn't either.
I read
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy and New Avengers.
But basically he's undergoing the same thing that everybody else is. They'll read a book and they think, oh, I wonder if they'll talk about it, and then they get mad at us when we don't. With the classic line, no love for blank,
right?
Which I actually don't see that much anymore. But
no, I don't see that.
No.
Yeah, I think I think the easiest way to do it is to make a list of what we have talked about and work off that list.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do a voicemail.
G'day, it's Paul Hicks from Australia here. I just have a question. Do you guys, you're always reading new comics. Do you get to reread your comics that you love? Do you find time to revisit something you've really enjoyed? Or is it something that's pretty hard to do? And if you are trying to reread something, what are you trying to reread at the moment? Thanks.
So this is a perfect question to answer the day we're back from a two-week vacation. A day, I'm sure, I mean, a vacation, I'm sure, full of many free hours in which to reread old comics. Paul, did you do any rereading over vacation?
Did I do any rereading? No.
Paul, do you do any rereading in general?
No. Well,
Josh, did you reread any comics over vacation?
I have a 3-year-old.
Did you do any rereading in general?
No. Right. I used to.
We used to do a lot. I think the deeper we got into covering comics, the more new material we take in, which means the less rereading. I don't do ever reread. Although I do find myself often leafing through old books.
There are books I remember when we did the Dark Knight Strikes Again podcast not too many months ago, was it?
It was not that long ago.
Okay. And I got to reread that, which has been the first time in a while that I'd sort of pulled up my absolute Dark Knight book.
Yeah.
I remember maybe a year ago, God, it might have been more, I reread The New Frontier. Like, there's a bunch of things that I do like to reread. I eyeball Preacher all the time.
You know what? You know what happened? I just thought of it. The reason we don't reread anymore is we used to reread a lot for the video show.
Yeah.
We used to reread all the time for the video show. And now, since we don't do that anymore, there's not an impetus, because we that show usually covered evergreen topics which featured older comics. So I was constantly rereading for that show.
Can I tell you like an eye into, I think the problem with it for me, my life, and the way that media works, is that when I am in a position to re-experience something, I tend to watch TV series, because I can kind of put those on while I'm working. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that. I have very little time that I can devote to just reading, and all of that tends to go into reading whatever the new releases are in a given week, and that kind of uses up that free time.
I had a whole plan for this break. I had a stack of trades at the nightstand, and I didn't touch a single one. I ended up getting sucked into the Bob Spitz Beatles books the whole time and not reading anything else.
Yeah.
I mean,
you want to talk about rereading. I've been reading Godland, or not Godland, Super Gods for like a year and a half.
Does it count as rereading if you're just really slow?
Yeah, I mean, like I'm at like 300 something. I'm almost done. Oddly enough, the two books that I've gotten through most recently are both about those TV shows that I said I was rewatching them. That's probably why I'm rewatching to begin with.
Yeah,
right.
I just finished The Sopranos again, and I'm going to point out I love the ending now.
Oh, I love the ending too.
I kind of liked it then, but now this time I love it.
Well, if you want to get into rereading TV shows, which is what we're doing, my brother, who stubbornly refused to watch Game of Thrones, my family visited California for Christmas, and we basically forced him Clockwork Orange style to watch the first season. So this whole week we were rewatching season one, and it's so good.
I remember I rewatched that. I watched Game of Thrones like 6 or 7 times the first season.
Yeah.
That was a problem.
And I saw so much. I hadn't rewatched it in a while, and I saw so much that I'd missed the first time or just didn't know about because it was revealed later, or characters that showed up early I hadn't forgotten about that you didn't see again until later.
Yeah.
Really, really good first season.
I really like – there's really not a ton of comic books that are good for rereading. I guess there are, but like there's certain ones. Like,
well, there's classics. The classics.
There are, but there are a handful of them that I really get a lot out of. I think when we used to do that, like when I reread Starman for the third time or something like that, when those omnibus came out, or when I've reread Sandman, that's a really good one for that, or Preacher. But I mean, like at this point, like I'd sit – when we do the show, I sit here and I stare at my shelves the entire time.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at these books, and it makes me anxious because I just think, when is this supposed to happen? Why do I even have these? I can't. It bothers me deeply, and it's one of those things where I kind of had to let it go.
Yeah,
because it bugs me. Like I'm looking at stuff that I really liked, you know, but like I'm looking at that beautiful hardcover copy of Local by Brian Wood and Ryan Kelly. I'm never going to reread that. I'm not. Like, I just know it, effectively. But I'm looking at it.
What if you break your legs?
Forever.
You're stuck in your bed.
I guess, but there's other books in reach, too, that I would probably read first.
Right.
I guess a thing could happen like that. But even so, I mean, shit. I can pick up an iPad at any point, and there's a billion things on there, too. Like, I honestly think that, like, we're suffering from too much choice. And if you're a person who... you know, you have limited spare time for whatever reason, whether it's your job or your family or your other hobbies. You know, in the summer or whatever, if it's nice out, I'm going to go ride my bike instead of reading a book.
Yeah.
Because
you want to die.
I don't want to die.
You have a death wish.
Yeah. I just felt, and my hand is almost healed.
Well, you mentioned Sandman in the Absolute Edition. That leads into the next question from Benjamin K. He says, I'm just wondering if when a series is available in both Absolute and Omnibus Edition, you all prefer one version over the other. Specifically, I'm looking into getting a hardcover collection of Sandman, and was curious if either of these formats generally stands out as being superior to the other. And I think that Sandman is the only series that does both formats. Because Absolutes tend to be...
Yeah.
Because first of all, DC has not done very many Omnibus.
I didn't realize they had done that.
Yeah, there's The Flash, Geoff Johns, there's the... Wolfman Perez, Teen Titans. There's the John's JSA coming out next month. There's
Animal Man. They did
Animal Man and 52.
I just got that.
So there's not many.
They're doing Justice Society or JSA next year.
So,
this year.
And they're doing a Sandman one, which they did a Sandman Absolute. Absolutes tend to be more self-contained. So the only really choice you've got in this particular dilemma is Sandman. And I would say go for the Omnibus.
I would say go for the
because I think when you're talking about a longer series, I think it's better. I mean, I think that, you know,
well,
that's just my personal.
No, I'm gonna on this series. If we're talking about Sandman specifically, mm-hmm. I feel reading the omnibus is awkward.
Yeah,
it's huge.
They're not like Marvel sized omnibus. Well, DC doesn't put up those giant ones. They're like
the Sandman ones.
Yes.
Okay.
They're shorter. They put out one or two big ones. I mean, the 52 one's big, but the not as big as those.
If you love the Sandman, like it's your, it's your series, it's your thing, then I would get it.
Absolute.
As an absolute. If you like it and you just want to have it all, I would go omnibus. So it really depends on how you feel, because it's a nice treatment. Those omnibus it's getting confusing. The absolutes are really nice, and then the Sandman absolutes are exceptionally nice.
Right.
So if it's like a special thing to you, I would go for that. You're gonna spend a lot more money going that way. So make sure make sure they're all available, because you don't want to go through that and find out you can't get two anywhere.
Right. And Starman, those are an omnibus too.
Yeah, that's
they're all about that size.
The sweet spot is the deluxe hardcover, like what they have with Why the Last Man, like where it's like sort of like two trades worth in a hardcover. Mm-hmm. It's oversized. It's not.
I like the Starman omnibus or the BPRD ones.
Yeah, those are a little bit bigger.
I think those are good.
Three trades worth.
Something like that.
Either way, I don't think Sandman goes out of print because it's a moneymaker.
Yeah, but maybe like that version of it will.
I don't think.
What about the annotated Sandman? Isn't that's a thing too?
There's
don't
a lot of things.
There's enough. Don't do that.
Let's do another.
That's too much. There's too much.
Another voicemail.
All right.
Hey guys, this is Jay from Virginia. I wanted to bounce something off you concerning this year's Marvel movies. I was highly disappointed walking out of both Iron Man 3 and Thor: The Dark World because there were too few nods and hooks to the Avengers movie storyline. I got very used to the appearance of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents in the Phase 1 flicks and was hoping to see the same steady drumbeat stringing the Phase 2 flicks from the end of Avengers 1 to the beginning of Avengers 2. While I enjoyed the Thor sequel otherwise, I almost only go to the Iron Man shows to see these nods to the Avengers storyline. I'm wondering if you guys feel the same, or if I need to brace myself for more Nolan-esque solo hero as an island-style movies for the next year. I'm really looking forward to Cap 2, as it appears that it will not disappoint in that area. Keep up the great work. Love the show. Thanks.
This is a tricky one. I think there's a lot of things going on here. Number one, I mean, I guess you could listen to our shows and you'd know if we agreed with you, because we would have mentioned that in the special shows we did for each of those movies. But I think... For me, I think we've loved all these movies, but I think when you've listened to what we've talked about or written about when we used to do the written reviews, we always disliked when the movies felt like they were just moving the story along, when they weren't their own thing. I remember
of the first Captain America.
Yeah, talked about Captain America especially. It felt just like getting from point A to point B and not telling its own thing at the end of it. And for me, I think the strongest thing Marvel did, and one of the reasons why – the only thing I didn't like about Iron Man 3, which I loved, was – you know, let the movie itself tell its own story, and then do the universe thing in the credits. Just do it that way. That way, the movie doesn't feel like it's just beholden to another thing. And Iron Man 3 didn't do that, which is why I was disappointed in that credit sequence in an otherwise excellent film.
The thing is, I mean, it's really like a choice. I mean, I think the caller is asking for Jay's asking for all or nothing, really. Yeah. And it sounds like you can get a little of each in each one. But they're not always going to be the same thing like comic books. I mean, one of the things that I think that has been amazing with what Marvel has done is that they really have, with much more extent than I ever thought possible, created a universe of interconnected things that mimics the way that comic books are,
mm-hmm.
that go from one thing to the other, which is cool.
Until it falls apart.
But like right, exactly. And there's a line where like eventually they can't. I don't think they can keep it up that way. And also from a sales standpoint, that's a difficult sell over and over. The movies are so far apart.
It's not necessarily – I mean, they're basically changing Hollywood. Everyone's not going to try to do the connected universe thing. But what's really bizarre about Jay's call is Iron Man 3 dealt directly with the events of the Avengers movie. And yes, so did Thor.
I mean, he just wanted Clark Gregg to show up more?
Well, I guess he's saying that they're not pushing forward towards Avengers 2. It's like their reactions to Avengers –
Yeah, but I mean comic books are like that too.
Yeah,
you know, what they are doing.
Well, let's look at what they are doing, and it's not so much in Iron Man 3, or not at all in Iron Man 3, but in Thor: The Dark World, the new interconnectedness is about the Infinity Gems,
right?
which is, you know, the weird thing that they're tying it into Guardians of the Galaxy. So that's the new way they're connecting the films.
Well, the balance has to be, there's a couple of things that they can do. They can go, this movie stands on its own. They can do, this movie stands with itself in the series of this movies, or like Iron Man 2, Iron Man 1, or this movie stands with all of them.
Right.
You know, and like they kind of have to make those, you know, each creative team on that, whoever the director and the screenwriter is, you know, they're tied into the Marvel Central, but they're going to make different decisions on each one. So each is not going to deliver the same thing.
I think they have to be on their own. Otherwise, I mean, they have to tell their own story.
See, the thing is, from Jay's call, it sounds like he said he only wanted to see Iron Man 3 because of any connections there might be between Avengers and Avengers 2 and any of the other movies. It doesn't seem like he values
Avengers
Iron
2
Man.
Is a year and a half away.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like he values Iron Man's adventure, anyway, which is fine, to each his own. But I think the connection to Avengers you can look at as a strength, but you can also look to it as like an albatross where these movies have to work on their own and they have to make a case for themselves, make a case for their still being solo superhero movies that aren't just Avengers team ups, because everyone's like, well, how do you follow up the Avengers? And that must have been a huge problem for the screenwriters trying to think of how are we going to do a story that touches on it a little bit, because we know that that's fan service that the audience wants, but also we want to distance ourselves a little bit and say, hey, Thor can still have cool adventures on his own and we don't need all this other stuff. So they're probably trying to distance a little bit from the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. And also because S.H.I.E.L.D. has its own TV show. So that stuff's all there.
Yeah, they've already set up and sold that property. So now it's got to go on its own.
Although it's been very heavily featured in Captain America. But that's more...
Sure, but if you look at you know, like, just say in the comics, look at the Thor series that Jason Aaron has done. Like, that was completely removed from everything. And that's why we liked it.
Right. Yeah.
So
I really just,
I understand
the film to exist on its own and then move the universe forward in that one scene, because that's what seemed to work well for them in the, before the Avengers movie came out.
Piecemeal, you know,
right?
There's ways to put that in there, and
because
and
that one scene doesn't affect the rest of the film. You can have your own film, and then, you know, in the background, which is the credit sequence, move, you know, get towards Avengers, but. You know, I don't want a whole movie that's pointing towards something, because then you don't.
That's what Iron Man 2 is. It's a whole movie in service to another bigger movie, and that got in the way of telling that movie's story. It's entirely, you know, the meddling of all that S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. It just got in the way of everything, and it was bad. But So Connor, what do you think? Like Thor, I feel like that's how they should do it.
Thor was wonderful.
It's a great movie on its own, and you have you know, they mention S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, so that stuff's still there, still in that world. They mention the Avengers.
Loki, obviously, they dealt with the whole thing. He tried to blow up New York. I mean, they had enough tie-ins where it felt like part of the whole, but it exists completely on its own. And then the credit sequence pointed towards Guardians of the Galaxy. I think that's the way. That's the template for it.
What more do you want, Jay? Look at the embarrassment of riches you have right now. And try to appreciate that part is what I would say. And I think, you know, like, I know you like what you like or whatever. I don't like some of the stuff and whatever. But I mean, yeah, you've got it pretty good in terms of look where we are now. And imagine that when Iron Man 1 came out, it was 2008.
Yeah.
So 6 years ago, not even. You know, who would have imagined that this much stuff would be going on? You know, you got to give and take a little bit, I think. And, you know, you can like what you like. That's totally fine. But if you look at it sort of from a whole, you know, it's pretty good.
I'm going to frame it this way. I hope that S.H.I.E.L.D. improves and gets to be a little bit more cohesive. And then Jay will have that to enjoy.
He's going to get a lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. action in the Cat movie.
Yeah.
And the other thing is they're not going to be able to attract quality filmmakers if all they're going to do is say, here, make a movie that gets to our next Joss Whedon movie. They're not going to get those people.
And that gets dangerous, too, because then somebody's going to screw it up, you know.
Well, yeah, but then you got film no prizes. Can you imagine? They're going to be at the point where it's going to be like...
We're basically at early Marvel territory right now. We're in 60s Marvel, where there's only a couple of properties. They all work together because there's only a few of them. But as we get to our Netflix shows and our Doctor Strange movies and whatever else happens, you know, you can't keep that central narrative, you know, pretty pristine when you've got so many different cooks.
This is what I would like. Okay, so I would say in lieu of the S.H.I.E.L.D. interconnectedness, I think it would be cool to have team-up movies. So have like a Thor and Captain America movie or something like that. Okay. It doesn't have to be a whole big Avengers thing. You could have movies where it's, you know, just
who doesn't
want to
see Science Bros?
Exactly. I think that's the sweet spot.
Which should be the title of the movie.
Should be.
Science Bros.
Actually, technically, they did an animated thing in December and didn't review
it. Peggy Carter Adventures.
So thank you, everyone who called in and wrote in. You can write us at contact@ifanboy.com and 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697. Keep those emails and questions coming in. They're always a lot of fun to do on the show. So let's, Paul, you got some things to plug. Plug some things.
Okay, so Booksplode coming up. We're going to have some Booksplode episodes. Special guest Scotty Young. We're going to be talking about Akira. So sometime during this month, we're going to talk about Akira volumes 1 and 2. There are 6 volumes, so each month we're going to talk about 2 volumes. So it's 2 volumes per episode. So your homework for this month is to read Akira volume 1 and 2. And then we'll go from there. We'll probably talk about the movie somewhere in there. But what else? What else is going on? CBR, I'm doing some writing. The last time we talked, I had just started that. And I spoke to Greg Rucka about the science behind Lazarus. Since then, I've talked to Scotty Young, talking about Christmas specials and pizza and how his son won't eat pizza and how we're concerned about that. We also talked to Mitch Gerrards, talked about the authenticity in Gerrards. Military shooters. What? Gerrards? No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
It's Gerrards, is how I say it.
It's not.
We're like
I know
this
that
now,
specifically
so it's whatever.
Because of the interview Gerrards. With Jeff okay. Parker on the video show.
Okay.
It was
so,
the whole thing.
Talked about military shooters.
Pronounced Mitch Homefries.
Okay. is it? No, it's not. And then the one that's going to be up today as you're downloading this is Jeff Parker. And we talk about Jaws and the ocean and the Natalie Wood murder case, and a whole bunch of crazy things. So it's just, it's conversations with writers and artists about things other than what they're working on. Sometimes we touch on that a little bit.
Every Sunday.
Every Sunday.
Comicbookresources.com.
Go to comicbookresources. Yeah, and noon Eastern time on Sundays. So check that out. It should be on the top of the page Monday morning, too.
We're going to have soon a show about the first DC, new 52 animated movie, aren't we? That's out soon.
Yeah.
War. Justice League War.
Justice League War.
Look for that soon.
What's that going to be?
What's that going to be?
That's the first Jeff Johns,
the first
52 Justice League arc.
Oh.
Yeah. Huh. So find all of these shows at ifanboy.com where you can comment on this show. You can go back and listen to the All Media Spectacular, which Paul and Mike Roma and I did, which was tons of fun.
That was a lot of fun.
Came out a couple weeks ago. Check that out if you haven't yet. And check out all
of
those shows.
In terms of rereading, I'm about a third through that.
Check out all the shows that we've got coming up that Paul just mentioned. And also follow the action at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy. That's where you'll not only find all the links to the shows, but you will also find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. So you're able to read along at home. You know, like we turn the little chime, you turn the page. That's how it works. Remember those books, Josh?
Yeah, of course.
Little chime and you have to turn the page.
I remember that.
With the record or with
the
tape?
Yeah, the record or tape, either one.
I remember it as a tape.
Yeah, well, of course you would.
Also, Fuzzy Typewriter Podcast talked about the last two Doctor Who specials, the 50th anniversary and the Christmas specials. So you can check that out, Fuzzy Typewriter.
Who?
Listen, I don't want to offend anyone, but seriously, Paul, what's wrong with Doctor Who fans?
It's hard to narrow down. I'm a fair weather Doctor Who fan, I gotta say.
2014 Josh is a troll.
Yeah.
Josh, where can the emails and call us, even though I just told them 2 minutes ago?
Well, in case anyone forgot, it would be contact@ifanboy. That's an email address. You put that in there. Ifanboy.com specifically. Or you can call 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. If you'd like to be hooked up with an inking job, we're probably not your people. Just letting you know.
Josh, you just reread the email address. See? You did some rereading.
Yeah, it's fine. I got through it. And you know what? It meant a lot more to me this time. I saw stuff that I'd never seen before. Yeah, like the T. Gosh. Oh, contact. Oh, it's fine.
So as Mitch Gerrards would say, is that right?
As far as I understand it, now you've got me doubting it.
If you
thought I had that lock.
If this kind of thing tickles...
That's actually the G is silent. It's Erd's.
If this kind of thing tickles your pickle, write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Sweet Spot would have been over the Christmas break. Told people about it.
Yeah.
Evangelized then. You blew it. Do you have any get-togethers
on my stock.
Martin Luther King Jr. Day? I guess that's the next holiday.
Yes.
Valentine's Day.
It seems,
get it out there.
Distasteful.
It does.
This Martin Luther King Day, try a new comic book podcast.
Oh, I don't endorse that at all.
Yeah, I don't. I can't get behind that. But Arbor Day, Groundhog Day,
go for it. Yes.
Okay.
The way to go. I guess we're done.
Yeah, we're
that
done.
Is it for this week's show. Done. Thank
so,
you for listening.
I think our resolution for the show should be to do better.
Do better. Look, first show back's always rough.
Yeah, especially when there are no books.
Yeah, that's true.
There was four books.
I opened up the shipping list and I went, oh. I was like, what is this? I thought it was maybe they hadn't updated it. It was still the Christmas list. No, it was nothing.
I think it was a chaotic show. Just coming back, but I think we're going to come together like a band of brothers.
What is the opposite of senioritis?
First Monday. So case of the Mondays.
Yes. Case of the Mondays.
Case of the Mondays.
Case of the Mondays. All right. See you next week. My.